right. I'm feeling bad because I've got a half-eaten piece of the very best carrot cake I've ever eaten in my life sitting in front of me here, and I only had a chance to eat half of it before the show started. Can't we put off the show for like another 3 minutes? I can finish it off in 3 minutes. This cost me $100, this one slice of carrot cake. It's unbelievable. That's what I gave Joni. Actually, I owed her the money, but it looked like I was buying a $100 slice of carrot cake. It tastes like it. This is unbelievable. This is unbelievable carrot cake. I don't know if I'm going to be able to do the show. I'm not a cake person. I don't eat cake. I don't even care for cake.
I say we call it a day.
All right. We're going to take Craig out later tonight. Craig's last day with us here at Issues Etc. is upon us. A day much, much rude. A day that will live in infamy. It is. And so in the course of today's program, if you call in for audio open lines, and please do, as we start out today's program with audio open lines, if you call in, make sure you are especially kind and say a kind word about Craig, because he, for the last, how many years now? What? Come on.
Let's see. I think it's been 4, maybe 5 years. I've worked with you guys. I've been at KFUO for 6. So I think I've worked with you guys for at least 4 of those years.
Well, so for the last 4 or so years, Craig has made Issues Etc. happen. He is, I will say without without any qualification for this weekday show, he has been the board op that just, I sleep sound at night knowing that Craig is sitting behind the board. It just makes me feel happy.
Not me.
Jeff never sleeps sound at night, but that's all right.
Rather me behind the board.
No, you cause me many a sleepless night, is no matter what you're doing. Even if you're just staying home,
you
cause me a sleepless night. I know. That's the relationship we have. So Craig is like he's the control rod in the nuclear reaction that is Issues Etc. behind the scenes. He keeps everything from melting down, and he's done it very well for the last 4 or 5 years. Thank you, Craig.
Far too kind. Thank you.
Well, I'm not being too kind. I'm just being honest. We're going to start out today's Issues Etc. with open lines. A bit to play for you. This is something that's been sitting on the disc for some time now, a National Public Radio feature on Hispanic women converting to Islam. Apparently, second only to conversions to evangelicalism out there on the West Coast. We'll hear a Reuters story on the funeral of this Catholic nun who was killed in the wake of the Pope's comments on Islam. And let's see. We'll also, what are we going to do else in audio open lines? We'll stop there, and then we'll pick up at 3:45, last 15 minutes of this first hour, with Uwe Simonetto. You might have heard about this. It was a German opera that featured the severed heads of religious leaders, including Jesus, Buddha, and Muhammad, that was canceled out of fear for Muslim retaliation. We'll hear the story from National Public Radio, but we'll also get Uwe Simonetto's opinion on it here in about 40 minutes on Issues Etc. The Gospel of Judas will be the beginning topic in the second hour of the program. Dr. Nicholas Perrin will join us from Wheaton College to just give us the ins and outs of this document that has caused people so much consternation. Bob Lico will join us halfway through the program. Miracles, signs, and wonders, how do they relate to faith? Bob will answer that question there at 4:30. In the third hour of the program, Doug Johnson joins us. I heard about it this morning. You heard about it as well. The House passed yesterday a parental interstate abortion notification bill. I think they passed it once before, but they did it again. And we'll find out what it's all about and whether or not it has any chances in the Senate. Doug Johnson of National Right to Life will be our guest. And let's see. Oh, in audio open lines in the last 45 minutes of the program, did any of you see O'Reilly? He had Bill Maher on. Bill Maher, of course, has this program called Politically Incorrect. I think that's what it's still called, Politically Incorrect.
Real Time.
Real Time with Bill Maher. I am so completely out of it, aren't I?
And I don't even get cable, and I know
that. Jeff knows that, and he doesn't even get cable. See, things are already falling apart. Craig hasn't even left yet, and I can't even get through the first 5 minutes of the show without making one colossal error after another. So Bill Maher was allowed to explain his thoughts on religion on last night's O'Reilly Factor. He had been invited by CBS to do it for their Eye to Eye segment on the CBS Evening News. And when they found out he wanted to talk about religion, they nixed it. So Bill gave him a chance to do it, and he did. And I want your reaction to it in the last hour of Issues Etc. today. Call in numbers are 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. Our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. We're coming to you live this Wednesday, the 27th of September. I was frankly surprised to hear this story. I would not have guessed it. But then, when I mentioned it a little bit later this week to Dr. Alvin Schmidt about Hispanic Roman Catholic women converting to Islam, he said, oh yes, after September 11th, there were many conversions to Islam, and most of them were women. Well, here's the story from National Public Radio.
Over the past few decades, the Catholic Church in America has seen an exodus of Latin American congregants from its pews. Experts point to growing competition from other denominations, primarily evangelical Christianity. However, an emerging segment of the Hispanic population is converting to Islam. And as NPR's Rachel Martin reports, most of them are women.
In Union City, New Jersey, Spanish is the language on the signs and on the street corners. Specialty stores sell ornate gold crucifixes, and Latin pop hits blare from storefronts. But just around the corner, Spanish conversations mingle with a different rhythm. Here at the North Hudson Islamic Education Center, weekly classes on what it means to be a Muslim cater to the mosque's growing Hispanic population. Mosque leaders say 10 years ago, there were only a handful of Hispanics at Friday prayers, and today there are roughly 150. On this night, a couple dozen new Spanish-speaking converts gather in a small classroom next to the main prayer room. Children chase each other around the room while their mothers, wearing different versions of the hijab headscarf, situate themselves at a long table or on the floor. They're here for a lesson on Islamic doctrine. But a different kind of learning takes place after class when prospective converts talk with mentors. 57-year-old Ramona Graviz is a native of Costa Rica. She started looking into Islam a couple of years ago after her son converted. She's close to making the Declaration of Islamic Faith, or Shahada, but she's worried about how her husband is going to deal with it. The problem with my husband, she says, is that he's embarrassed by what other people are going to think and say when I start to wear hijab. Diana Santos nods her head with understanding. Santos converted to Islam more than a decade ago when she was a teenager in her home country, Spain. She's been pushing the North Hudson Mosque to provide counseling to help new converts deal with family relationships. But for the time being, she's helped set up an informal women's support network.
So you try to help when you see a newcomer, you try to tell to them how is it going to be with their families. And like when I convert, I understood what she's going through. I didn't wear hijab immediately because I know my family was going to kill me or like make a big deal out of it. You're not an Arab, you're a Hispanic woman, you cannot convert.
Official data on Hispanic conversion to Islam is scarce. The U.S. Census Bureau doesn't track religious statistics, but according to the Islamic Society of North America, there are roughly 40,000 Hispanic Muslims in the U.S. Experts say there is an increasing trend of Hispanic converts to Islam, much of which has to do with the changing demographics. As the Hispanic population grows, so does the number of Hispanic Muslims. And most of them are women, like Wendy Diaz. The native Puerto Rican says she was drawn to Islam in large part because of its strict guidelines on women's appearance, rules she says make her feel honored and protected.
All right, now, before we go on to the quote from this lady, listen, I think this is something worth noting. Why are these women converting to Islam? I mean, some of it has to do with the fact that they were not well-grounded in the Roman Catholic faith to begin with, perhaps. We'll hear a little bit of that in a second. But the appeal for these women centers around how Islam treats women. Now, how many times have we heard that Islam, in Islamic countries, treats women very poorly, at least the way Westerners measure these things? What kind of rights do women exercise under Sharia law? Not a lot. They are just barely above chattel. But here in the West, where Sharia law doesn't hold sway, and where perhaps those things that are, can we even say this, best about Islam's treatment of women remain, while all of those things that are worst about it have fallen off because of Western influence, the appeal here for these women is they are respected in Islam. And as Latino women, I guess we should say Latinas, I think that's the proper way of saying it, they don't feel the same respect in a Christian context. So they feel respected, protected. By the way, I think this is a good place to point out that if you look in the New Testament and the Old Testament, the Christian scriptures, you're going to find an incidental, coincidental similarity between the way women seem to be treated. There are an awful lot of women, we're told by, you know, Bible scholars that women in Jesus' day held a very low standing in society. Now, that probably is true, except we need to understand it in its context. In its context, in the ancient Near East, all of these restrictions on women, they couldn't own property, they couldn't do this, they couldn't do that, were considered to be protections of women. In a society that is really is dominated by the male of the species, these things were considered to be protections, that women wouldn't interact with men in public if it were not a blood relative or their husband. That was intended to protect women. The fact that they were protected at home and didn't have much of a public life, again, a protection. In a world where women aren't afforded, in law, all the rights that Western women have today, women must be protected from being used like chattel. You see how it goes together. So I think the same is true of Islam in its origins. What Islam has done is turned into doctrine the customs of the ancient Near East. How ironic is it that modern 21st century women, immigrating to the freest nation in the world, what is quintessentially Western America, find more protection and more respect as women in Islam?
I found myself to be getting more respect as a woman. I would be able to go to a job interview and get a job based on my intelligence, not on the way that I looked. And likewise, from the opposite sex, I wouldn't get that negative attention that a lot of women get.
Yvonne Haddad is a professor of Islamic history at Georgetown University.
Whereas American culture gives them freedom but not respect, Islam may restrict their freedom, but it gives them a lot of respect.
Haddad says Hispanic women are drawn to Islam because it reflects the values of the patriarchal conservative societies of Latin America that have been diluted in modern American culture.
There's a group of women who are very unhappy with the feminist movement that has left them behind. There is some restriction which probably these women want to put on themselves. They don't want to be socially active the way American society demands of them. They're very comfortable in being a wife and a mother.
But they also come to Islam for something more, something they didn't get from the Catholic Church. The Catholic Almanac estimates that roughly 100,000 Hispanics in the U.S. leave the Catholic Church every year. 20-year-old Gabby Gonzalez is one of them. Like other converts, Gonzalez found the Catholic Church too bureaucratic and too impersonal. She also had a hard time with certain aspects of the faith, like the hierarchy of the church, belief in the Trinity, and original sin. She remembers going to Mass weekly with her grandmother and cousins and just feeling lost.
We would go and, you know, they would never explain to us, you know, why we have to go to church. They would never explain to us. They would just say, you know, you just have to do it because our grandparents told us to do it. You know, it's always like a generation thing that they had. So, okay, but I never had a purpose of like, okay, why am I kneeling, you know, or why am I putting my hands together? Why am I exalting the image that I have in front of me?
Now, this is the very heart of this issue as far as I'm concerned. And you can sit there and say, oh, yeah, there you go. See, the Roman Catholic people, they don't explain to anybody what they believe. They just go through these meaningless rituals. They just go through the motions, and that's what they teach their people to do. And so is it any wonder that this young woman raised in the Catholic Church, having gone through the motions and not been taught, we hear it all the time from Catholics and former Catholics, not been taught anything of what they really believe, would leave to go to something like Islam, where what they believe, albeit much simpler, what they believe is pretty clear. And now, before you go off on the Roman Catholics, I would like to address this to my own context, to Lutherans. If someone walked up to you and said, why do you do this, you Lutherans? Could you give an answer any better than this poor former Roman Catholic girl here who is now converted to Islam because none of it ever meant anything to her anyway? If your kids asked you, why do we go to church? Would you be tempted to give exactly the same answer? Come on, it's a generational thing. grandparents did it, we do it, you do it. It's true. I remember Don Matzett would observe this all the time. One of the hallmarks of kind of the faithful lifelong Lutheran, you walk up to him and you say, what do you believe about this? They'll say, well, ask the pastor. He'll tell you all about it. Or I remember as a parish pastor being asked by people, Pastor, what do we believe about this? Well, my response eventually became, I don't know. What do you believe about it? I know what I believe. I know what the church teaches. But as for what you believe, I can't answer that question. I would hope that you believe what the Bible teaches, what our church teaches. You know, there is a streak. It's not just the Catholics. There is a streak in my own church that where the lay people say to themselves, look, it's the pastor's job to know this stuff. We just believe it, but we don't really believe it because we can't tell anyone what we believe. It's the pastor's job to believe that stuff. So if you want to know what I believe, go ask the pastor. And thereby, we are training the next generation of what? Muslims? Maybe something else. Who knows? Because they will flee, the next generation will flee that just as quickly as they flee a Roman Catholicism that doesn't know what it believes. I've said it before many times, if you're going to be a Baptist, know what a Baptist believes and believe it. If you're going to be a Lutheran, be a Lutheran, know what Lutherans believe and believe it. If you're going to be Roman Catholic, be Roman Catholic. Know what Roman Catholics believe and believe it. But the mindset is, the less we know, the better. Because on Judgment Day, I certainly wouldn't want to, I can simply plead ignorance. Okay, I'm sorry. I know that stuff was covered in catechism class, but of course I've forgotten it. It's been a long time. And I spent the rest of my adult Christian life trying my hardest not to learn anything I didn't have to learn, which was just about everything. Now, I read something on Greg Alms, who's a regular guest on this program, has a blog, Incarnatus Est. He's been on this program before. And he wrote something very insightful about a simple childlike faith that many Christians have. And while I agree with that wholeheartedly, pastors should not expect their people to be professional theologians or to be pastors. They have different vocations, you know. I agree with that wholeheartedly. I would offer this word of warning, which is people should know what they believe. It's among the physicists who study string theory, they say, if you can't explain the theory to someone else, you don't understand it yourself. This happened just last night. My daughter and I were sitting doing algebra. We were doing some sort of functions. I don't know what it was. I can't remember. I thought I understood how to do the problem, and I went to do it, and then she required that I explain it to her, and I couldn't. And I realized I can't explain it to her, therefore I don't even understand this myself. I think the same is true of Christians. You don't have to be able to explain what you believe in at the level of a professional theologian or a trained pastor. But you do have to be able to articulate what you believe. Another thing Matzett used to say, he used to talk about asking Lutheran lay people, why are you a Lutheran? Because we have the pure gospel. What do you mean by pure gospel? I don't know. Ask the pastor. He can explain it to you. I said this a couple of weeks ago. There was in 1998, there was a survey done by Lutheran Brotherhood of all Lutherans in the United States. Not all the Lutherans, but all across Lutheranism in the United States. It was a big survey, had a pretty decent, decently small margin of error. The question was asked. It was multiple choice. Believe it or not, it was multiple choice. What is the heart of the gospel? And of all the things they could choose from, including the right answer, 61% of Lutherans chose God's rules for right living. The heart of the gospel is God's rules for right living. These are 61% of Lutherans. If you can't tell someone what you believe, even in the simplest terms, and I speak here again to Lutherans, you might be a cultural Lutheran. That is, you know, you're just like this girl was a cultural Roman Catholic. Her grandparents were Catholic. Her parents were Catholic. She was until she realized she wasn't. Now, before we get to that point, maybe we should, cultural Lutherans out there should realize they're not and start learning what they believe. It wouldn't hurt you. All right, back to this story from National Public Radio, the Hispanic women converting to Islam.
A couple years ago, Gonzalez started visiting Protestant churches, even some synagogues, looking for a spiritual home. Eventually, a Muslim friend introduced her to a local imam. He gave her some books and answered her questions, and late last year, Gonzalez took her pledge of faith. She's put away her ripped jeans and tank tops. Now she wears the niqab, the all-encompassing black Islamic dress that reveals only her big brown eyes. And she talks about her new faith with all the enthusiasm of a new convert who's found new meaning.
It's about community and unity. You know, everywhere we go, we carry this strong passion, this feeling that, you know, everything we do is for Allah.
But her decision came as a shock to her family, and she recalls the nerve-wracking moment when she told her father, a devout Catholic.
I'm like sweating, and I didn't know how to tell him, you know, because he comes from a, you know, we come from a different culture, and I said, hey, Dad, you know, I just want to tell you that, you know, I believe, you know, how, you know, I have a love for God. And, you know, I just want to tell you that I declare my faith today and, you know, I took Islam and, you know, I'm a Muslim.
At first, she says her father dismissed her foray into Islam as a teenage phase. But then Gonzalez stopped eating pork, started praying five times a day, and started wearing the hijab, which eventually got her kicked out of the house.
We'll pick up on her story on the other side of this break. We're listening to a National Public Radio feature on Hispanic women who are converting to Islam. There are a number of reasons, of course, yes. Women, they are finding more respect and protection under the dictates of Western Islam. Some of them didn't know what they believed to begin with when they were Roman Catholic. It's Audio Open Lines this Wednesday, September the 27th. Our call-in numbers 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Our in-studio email address, issues, etc@kfuo.org. When we come back, a little bit more Audio Open Lines. We'll finish up that story. Maybe we'll get to this Reuters story on the funeral of the Catholic nun in Somalia who was killed only hours after leading Islamic cleric condemned Pope Benedict's remarks on Islam. Tomorrow on the program, an interview with Marilyn Hickey. Yes, Marilyn Hickey. We'll be talking to her tomorrow on Issues, etc. Our call-in numbers, this break is a good time to call during Audio Open Lines, 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. Our in-studio email address, I'll get to some email here on the other side of the break too, issuesetc@kfuo.org. Then at 3:45, up until the end of the first hour, Uwe Simonetta will be our guest here in Studio A. A German opera has been canceled out of fear of Muslim retaliation.
Equipping the priesthood of all believers. You're listening to Issues, etc.
I believe that I cannot, by my own reason or strength, believe in Jesus Christ my Lord or come to Him. But the Holy Spirit has called me by the gospel, enlightened me with His gifts, sanctified and kept me in the true faith.
These are some of the most familiar words ever written by Martin Luther. Our Issues, etc. book of the month for September is called Listening to Luther. It's an audio CD and booklet of Luther's small catechism with hymns that match each of the catechism's six parts: the Ten Commandments, the Apostles' Creed, the Lord's Prayer, baptism, absolution, and the Lord's Supper. You can order Listening to Luther by calling Concordia Publishing House any weekday during regular business hours, 1-800-325-3040. You can also browse before you buy at our website, issuesetc.org, 1-800-325-3040 or issuesetc.org.
Recently, a popular radio network aired a news segment about the tragedy of beach dolphins.
This is a special commentary from the Susan B. Anthony List, named for the suffragette who was proudly pro-life.
A few minutes into the news story, a dolphin expert explained the effect beaching was having on the unborn baby dolphins. Ironically, although contemporary media do not generally refer to unborn humans as babies, it seemed perfectly natural to refer to the unborn dolphins as babies. The point is that the natural reference to the unborn as a baby applies most strongly to humans. Despite media bias, unborn humans are still babies and deserve the same dignity, rights, and protections that all humans have.
This is Marjorie Dannenfelser, president of the Susan B. Anthony List, inviting you to join us in our battle for life. For more, go online to sba-list.org.
This presentation of the Meyer Minute on AM 850 KFUO is underwritten by Thrivent Financial, where values thrive, and online at thrivent.com.
Welcome to the Meyer Minute. The parable about the repentant prodigal son, the boy who put his father's house in the rearview mirror and then blew through the old man's money, that parable appeals to our deep yearning for a home where we are safe and accepted. If you had or have a tough situation at home, you know that marriage and family is not the automatic answer. If you have a church home, you may know that's not heaven either. Abraham Heschel suggests the home we yearn for. He wrote, "For the soul, home is where prayer is. In his cottage, even the poorest man may bid defiance to misery and malice. That cottage may be frail, its roof may shake, the wind may blow through it, the storms may enter it, but there is where the soul expects to be understood. Just as the body, so is the soul in need of a home. Everybody must build his own home. Everybody must guard the independence and privacy of his prayers. It is the source of security for the integrity of conscience. At home, I have a father who judges and cares, who has regard for me, and when I fail and go astray, misses me. I will never give up my home." Now, if you have given up your prayer home, remember, the Father is waiting to welcome you back. I'm Dale Meyer.
This presentation of the Meyer Minute on AM 850 KFUO is underwritten by Thrivent Financial, online at thrivent.com. We do more than work. We work with a purpose.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. It's Audio Open Lines for about the next 10 minutes. Then Uwe C. Minetto will join us here in Studio A. We're going to be talking about this cancellation of a German opera out of fear of Muslim retaliation. In the opera, I guess toward the end of the opera, they display what appears to be the severed heads of Buddha, Muhammad, and Jesus. Don't ask me. I'm no opera fan, so I have no idea what's going on. However, the opera was canceled not because it would offend Buddhists and not because it would offend Christians. It was canceled because it would offend Muslims. And Uwe will chime in on that. Perhaps he'll sing a little of the opera for us, coming up here in about 10 minutes. And then in the second hour of the program, Dr. Nicholas Perrin will be our guest. We're going to talk about the Gospel of Judas. Our call-in numbers are 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. Our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. Here's an email from Steve. Do we have that one there? Steve writes this, adding a little something here. He says, "Could part of the problem be that the Catholic Church does not properly teach and train the laity in the faith?" Yes, I think that's exactly what part of the problem is. Look at it this way. It's not so much that Islam was that attractive to these women. In some cases, it was. But it wasn't so much about the attraction of Islam as it was there was nothing keeping them in Roman Catholicism. And Steve is quite right to point out, as he goes on, of course, this problem isn't limited to the Roman Catholic Church, but to most of American Christianity. Lutherans are no exception. The level of instruction in the faith has been replaced with 40 days of whatever or having great Christian sex. Yes, it has. You see, when you cater the teaching of the church or I should say, the teaching that takes place in the church, to what people want to hear, you will, one way or the other, end up with 40 days of whatever and how to have great Christian sex, because that's what people want to hear. The question is, are we breeding the next generation through this kind of lack of proper instruction of people in the Christian faith? Are we breeding the next generation of atheists, agnostics, skeptics, Muslims? Are we giving them anything that will keep them in the Christian faith? Are we breeding the next generation of Bill Maher's? I think he was raised in a Christian household, wasn't he? Yeah. All right, we have a few minutes left in this NPR feature on Hispanic women converting to Islam. Here's how it finishes off.
That's when my mom said, okay, you know, that's it. I had it. You have to speak to her. I can't have her here anymore. You know, I feel like she's not like with like us and everything. So my father took me aside. He told me, he asked me, either Islam or us.
Yvonne Haddad of Georgetown University says this kind of reaction is not uncommon.
For a lot of families, they see it as a rejection of the values that they had tried to raise their kids on, and they find it very hard. And some people come around eventually.
For other converts, managing family relationships after converting has been a little easier. Dressed in a hot pink trench coat and matching headscarf, 31-year-old Linda Rodriguez stands in stark contrast to the rest of the women at the North Hudson Mosque. When the divorced mother of one converted to Islam 5 years ago, her Puerto Rican family thought they would lose her to a different religion and a different way of life. But over the years, she's integrated Islam into her life in a way that reflects her devout faith, but leaves plenty of room for her to embrace her identity as a Latina. It's this balance, she says, that's helped her family come to terms with her new religion.
As time has passed by, they've seen the difference in me, and they're starting to accept it, and they realize that it's not a face. This is already who I am.
Like other converts, Rodriguez came to Islam not through any organized outreach program, but through a friend of a friend and what started as casual conversations about faith. Officials with the Islamic Society of North America say individual mosques are engaging more with growing Hispanic communities, but active proselytizing isn't part of Islamic tradition or doctrine. Instead, they say they're opening the door to Islam, and Hispanic women are choosing to walk through. Rachel Martin, NPR News, Washington.
Well, this is something I think that's worth noting. There's a number of angles on this. The Western Islam angle on this, that is, Western Islam is attractive to Western women, to some of them. And what's keeping people in the Roman Catholic Church or the Lutheran Church or the Baptist Church or the Presbyterian Church or the Methodist Church if Islam comes with its attractions? In a lot of cases, nothing. Now, think about this. Why is it that people are leaving, say, I talked about this early in the week, the Episcopal Church USA in droves. And we're not just talking about a few people leaving. We're talking about people just bolting from the church. Is it only because it's had so much controversy in the last 2 years? No. That might be a contributing factor. But the decline began 30 years ago when there wasn't a lot of public controversy in the Episcopal Church USA. It's a very old historic church. It's the oldest Protestant denomination in the United States. So what happened? I mean, the easy thing to say is they went liberal. But what does that mean? You know what it means? It means they stopped teaching the Christian faith. And when you don't teach people what the truth, the problem is not that they won't believe anything. It's that they'll believe everything. Or anything. It's also parents, too. I mean, we can quote from memory, train up a child in the way that he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. And then we have churches that don't train up our children in the way that they should go, and the parents give them big old thumbs up. Doing a good job with those kids. Don't make them memorize the catechism. We wouldn't want to train them up in the way they should go. And then we wonder why, when they are old, they depart from it. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. Or perhaps after they're confirmed, they've graduated. They don't need to study the catechism. when Luther, even before you get to the part of the catechism that everybody memorizes, has a big old section in there saying, oh, by the way, I wrote the thing. I'm a doctor of theology. He was a genius. And I still study it every day. He says, I become every day like a little child and learn my catechism all over again. At Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, it is a Christ-centered, cross-focused seminary committed to training pastors to teach their people what Christians believe, why they believe it. Find out more about them at our website, issuesetc.org, or you can call them toll-free. That's the number for LCMS World Relief, by the way. You want me to have them call LCMS World Relief? I mean, Matt will tell them all about Fort Wayne, Indiana, if you really want them to, but that's kind of a roundabout way to find out about Concordia Theological Seminary. Their number is 1-800-481-2155. 1-800-481-2155. Yet more evidence that even before Craig leaves, things are falling apart.
Sorry about that mistake.
You're forgiven. Would you?
It's a new Radio Shack equipment we have here.
This is great. I can actually hear you now.
I think if I would have bought the walkie-talkies we bought Justin for Christmas for like $15 at Walmart, I think they would have been sufficient.
You know, I thought this was a baby monitor, to tell you the truth, when I walked in here and saw this little walkie-talkie thing. I thought it was a baby monitor, which is completely appropriate. I'm the parent. He's the child, right? And since I can't always see what he's doing in there, it's my way of monitoring the kid, right? You don't have a comeback for that. In fact, I can even turn this off. So no one hears what you have to say.
I'm too busy marveling at the state of our equipment we have here at AMA50K.
All right. Let's just hope the listeners can't hear what he's saying. All right. One of the tragic outcomes of an unintended outcomes. How do you segue away from that? One of the tragic and unintended outcomes of the Pope's comments on Islam, which he certainly did not attend, but one of the results of the Islamic reaction was the death of a nun in Somalia. Here's the story from Reuters on her funeral.
Sister Leonelle Scobati is remembered at a funeral service in Nairobi. The Italian nun was shot dead in a children's hospital in Somalia, raising fears of a new wave of violence in the lawless country. She'd worked for the Missionaries of the Consolation for 3 decades in Kenya before transferring to Mogadishu, where she taught nursing.
But Sister Leonella believed that this new world was possible. A world where brothers and sisters would live together. Is it a coincidence that she was shot dead with a Somali Muslim, Mohammed Mahmoud, a father of 4?
Her killing came during a wave of Islamic anger at a remark made by the Pope, but the nuns were already subject to death threats in a land largely taken over by radical Islamists. Senior Christian figures from across Africa came to pay their last respects. Bennett Allen, Reuters.
All right, there's the story. The funeral was held, and this is, I think this will go down. Oh, by the way, notice how the Christians reacted when the nun was killed. They had a funeral for her. There was no counter-reaction or counter-attack. 6 churches burned and this nun killed by the Islamic uprising after the Pope condemned Islamic violence. And they turned the other cheek. There's a difference here. Well, for the remainder of this hour, let's look at a story. This is kind of an odd story. There's an opera that was supposed to be and had been for some time being performed in Germany, and it's been shelved because it has religious content. Now, in the course of this opera, near the end of this opera, apparently, there are 3 what appear to be severed heads displayed, one of them of Buddha, one of them of Jesus, and the other one of Mohammed. Here's why they canceled it.
One of the leading opera houses in Germany has canceled a presentation of the Mozart opera Idomeneo because of a potential security risk. The production includes a scene, not part of the original opera, that features the severed heads of religious leaders, including Muhammad. The director of the Deutsche Oper in Berlin says she was warned by security officials that staging the production could pose a security risk. Politicians have criticized the decision. It follows an uproar in the Muslim world over a recent speech the Pope made in Germany and protests over cartoons of Muhammad in a Danish newspaper. From Berlin, NPR's Emily Harris reports.
The opera tells the story of how Idomeneo, the king of Crete, got out of a promise to Poseidon, the god of the sea, to kill his own son. The canceled production broadened the theme of human discontent with demands of the gods. In the epilogue, Idomeneo takes the heads of Poseidon, Jesus, Buddha, and Muhammad out of a bloody bag and puts each on a chair in triumph. The performance was controversial when it premiered 3 years ago, but Deutsche Oper director Kirstin Harms says she decided to cancel Idomeneo performances scheduled for this season to avoid endangering opera employees and the public. She said local security authorities advised that the scene showing Muhammad's severed head could possibly create problems.
What matters to me is the fact that the Berlin Criminal Investigation Office looked into it, and the Berlin Interior Minister told me there could be problems. To ignore these facts could have had consequences. The question now is how we handle these cases in the future. This was an ad hoc decision.
It did appear a bit ad hoc. Germany's interior minister, on a visit to Washington, said it was crazy to cancel. Berlin security officials emphasized the decision to cancel came from the opera house alone. There seems to have been no specific threat. Police say they weren't aware of the production until a phone call on a hotline from an audience member, which came this summer when the opera wasn't running. Helmut Maro covers classical music for the Süddeutsche Zeitung newspaper. He says the opera's producer, Hans Neuenfels, has been controversial in the past.
He forces people to think about the opera and not just take it as they're used to. He's looking for a new view on the plot. He doesn't fear political links, but he's not looking for scandals.
The decision has been fiercely criticized by conservative German politicians. Wolfgang Bosbach is a security expert with the Christian Democratic Party.
For centuries, we have been struggling for human rights, for civil rights, for freedom of opinion, for freedom of arts and culture. Now, whenever something is said that might be misunderstood by religious fanatics, we must not take it back. We must not go on our knees. If we did, we would question everything we have achieved in civil society.
Tomorrow, the German government kicks off a formal, multi-year conversation with Muslims here. Ayub Axel Köhler heads the Central Council of Muslims in Germany. Although he's not seen the opera, he says it is hard for Muslims to be integrated into German culture.
There has been many problems arisen through the discussion of the so-called Leitkultur, the cultural identity of Germany. And in this concept, we don't belong to the German culture.
The canceled performances of Idomeneo will be replaced with Mozart's Marriage of Figaro and Verdi's La Traviata. Emily Harris, NPR News, Berlin.
Well, joining us here in Studio A to discuss this story, again, it appears to me to be either over-caution or a disproportional reaction to any depictions of Islam, positive or negative, in the Western world. Joining us here to talk about this, the cancellation of this German opera out of fear of Muslim retaliation, Uwe Simonetto. He's an international journalist and director of the Concordia Seminary Institute on Lay Vocation and the Concordia Center for Faith and Journalism. Uwe, welcome back.
Good to be here.
What's your reaction?
My reaction is about the same that the painter Max Liebermann voiced when he saw the Nazis march through the Brandenburg Gate. He said, and I quote you in German, that first, "Ich kann gar nicht so viel fressen, wie ich kotzen möchte. I can't eat as much as I want to throw up." And this was my first reaction. My second reaction was I was actually rejoicing because immediately after this outrageous news appeared in the newspapers and in German newspapers and on television, etc. I watch German television news all the time. actually, across the board, people reacted rather vigorously against this decision. They said, it is time we stop this nonsense here. Now, I think what this director has done, I mean, the production here is a lot of gratuitous baloney, basically. I mean, you know, why mess with a Mozart opera in such a dopey way? That is neither here nor there, though. What is important is that we cannot let ourselves be bullied in our minds or in reality. I don't really care. Bullied to the point that we interfere with the freedom of creativity, of the arts, of freedom of information and what have you. And suddenly the Germans, who've been goofing about all this, you know, for decades now, suddenly the penny has dropped. We are in danger of losing something very, very, very critical here. And therefore, I think this woman who is responsible for this actually did all of us a favor, because it is right now on the front burner.
I cannot help but see the contrast here, Uwe, between even the fear of the kind of reaction to this German opera,
right, and
the reaction to the cartoons depicting Mohammed and the reaction to the Pope's comments, with the reaction that we just heard about a few minutes ago, this nun in Somalia who was killed after the Pope's comments and by a leading Islamic cleric there. The Christian reaction to that is a peaceful funeral procession, not counter-violence.
Correct. And that nun, before she died, doubtless a painful death, forgave her murderers. Doesn't somebody begin to understand that maybe Christianity is a more attractive religion? I mean, should we not at one point acknowledge that the emperor has no clothes on, and that Islam is really, or at least the way it is presented to us by contemporary Muslims, is a very, very unattractive religion?
We seem to have turned a corner. So after September 11th, it was probably the force of political correctness in Western civilization that was keeping people from saying nasty things or even speaking the truth about Islam.
Yeah.
But we seem to have crossed a threshold where now it's not simply, well, let's be nice to the Muslims, let's not say anything negative about their religion out of political correctness. Now it is, we're afraid that if we say something, there will be a negative reaction from the Muslim world. And now we're afraid to say anything truthful about it, not because we're denying it's true, but because we know it's true.
Yeah, but we've turned a further corner now. You and I are discussing this right now. Mm-hmm. We are afraid. And if you watch the newspapers in Europe or the news programs, you would realize that other people are discussing this and say, no, we must not be afraid of this. We cannot allow this to happen. Not again. That we are being bullied by others. And I think we are now, by the way, I wouldn't even criticize those Christians here in this country who, after 9/11, said, "Well, let's be protective about our local Muslims. I mean, lest they be attacked unjustly by bigots." And there were plenty. I mean, you know, the first victim of bigotry here after 9/11 happened to be a Sikh, by the way. You know, and the others were a couple of Aramean Christians. But I would even say this is basic American decency that came across here. But, you know, decency is decency and idiocy is idiocy. And if we then say, no, all the religions are the same, this is one big, wonderful Abrahamic family. No, it's not one Abrahamic family. The Jews and the Christians are part of one Abrahamic family. And what we are experiencing with Islam and what we have throughout history experienced with Islam is a distortion of the Abrahamic faith that has been handed down.
The question was raised near the end of that piece from National Public Radio about whether or not Muslims in Germany can integrate into German culture? Let's answer that question only writ larger, if we could. Can Muslims integrate into Western culture and remain Muslims in the fullest sense of the word?
I have my doubts. Well, they can integrate and remain Muslims, but they would not be recognized as Muslims by their fellow Muslims who consider themselves Orthodox. And you see, the thing is, if you integrate into this society here, then you accept all of the society's standards, and those standards violate the Sharia law. And so, therefore, you would have to alter the Sharia law, which is in the Hadith, mainly in the traditions of Islam, in the sayings of Muhammad. You would have to alter statements in the Quran, which is a heresy. It is not debatable, it is a heresy, and therefore it is a crime and it's an offense against Islam, not just against the Islamic religion, but you actually set yourself up for being killed for violating, for heresy. And there are lots of nasty guys out there who would do just that.
With less than a minute, 30 yeah. seconds here, where do you think we're going next? If we've gone from political correctness now to a generalized fear of how Muslims might react if something is said or done that offends them, where does it go next? 30 seconds.
I think it will aggravate the situation, and I believe that at one point Christians will have to come out and just say, look, here is the way we, here's what we teach about these given matters, and you might want to consider that.
Uwe Simonetto is an international journalist, director of the Concordia Seminary Institute on Lay Vocation and the Concordia Center for Faith and Journalism. Thank you very much for being our guest, for coming in.
Thanks.
When we come back from this break, it's hour two of Issues, Etc. Nicholas Perrin's going to join us. The Gospel of Judas caused no small amount of consternation, especially when it was published in English and circulated. I think it was probably one of the more popular books selling a couple months ago, especially during the summer. Short little missive there. Is it a gospel? Was it written by Judas? Where did it come from? Nicholas Perrin says it's actually, its latest appearance is actually a rediscovery. But does it call into question the very historic foundations of the Christian faith? We'll answer that question on the other side of the break. And then Bob Alico will join us for the second half of that second hour. We'll talk about miracles, signs, wonders, and faith. In the third hour of the program, we'll spend that with Doug Johnson to begin with. He's legislative director of National Right to Life. We'll talk a bit about House passage yesterday of the Parental Interstate Abortion Notification Bill. That's a long name. But we'll find out what that bill is all about and get Doug's reaction to some of the critics of the bill. Where is it going from here? And the last 45 minutes of Issues, Etc. is audio open lines. We're going to be playing a little bit of Bill Maher's thoughts on religion during last night's O'Reilly Factor. Bill O'Reilly allowed him to opine about religion. He did. He said all religion is basically a mental illness, and he didn't make much of a distinction between Muslims, Christians, Jews, anyone for that matter. I want your reaction to that in the last 45 minutes of Issues, Etc. Stay tuned.
Contending for truth in an age of anti-truth. You're listening to Issues, Etc.